Hey, it's Tim here, and I'm delighted to let you know that tickets for my first ever live Piano Teachers Conference have just gone on sale. This two-day event called the Piano Pivot Live will be held here in Melbourne in January 2020 and will be unlike any live event or workshop you've experienced before. Not only will you be inspired by our amazing speakers, including Samantha Coates, Anita Collins, Nicola Canton, Philip Johnston, Carly McDonald, and many more, you'll also get to participate in practical hands-on workshops, masterminds, and implementation sessions that guarantee you'll not just be inspired, you'll also have a plan of action to take back to your studio. A limited number of early bird tickets are now on sale at pianopivotlive.com. If you've ever thought about visiting Melbourne or indeed Australia, then this is your perfect excuse. Come and enjoy the summer sun in one of the most beautiful cities in the world while gearing up for your best year of teaching yet. Head to pianopivotlive.com now to find out everything you need and to secure your seat today. I can't wait to see you in January.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Hey everyone, it's Tim Topham here again on the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. I'm so glad that you've decided to join us for another episode of Season 2 2019. This is episode number 169. And in today's episode, we're going to be having a chat with the developer and founder and creator of one of my favorite apps. And it's probably an app that if you've been following me for any length of time, you might have tried out yourself and hopefully have thoroughly enjoyed using. And I can't wait to unpack this a little bit more. This is the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, which is your weekly dose of creative inspiration, fun conversation, and teaching tactics for your studio. And if you're an Inner Circle member, then a special shout out to you guys. Today's show notes and full transcript are now available at timtopham.com/episode169. My guest today is an inventor, entrepreneur, and composer who has won the EU's biggest science competition for youth and studied future technologies at Singularity University, based at NASA Ames Research Center in Silicon Valley. In media, he's been called a fearless inventor and a super highbrow. In 2014, he was given the Most Creative Finn Award at Slush, and in 2018, MIT Tech Review honored him among the 35 innovators under 35 in Europe. We're going to unpack exactly what all those awards and accolades mean, but for now, welcome to the show, Perttu Palonen.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. You're actually my first ever guest from Finland. So congratulations on that. And just before I hit record, we were having some laughs about just how hard Finnish is as a language to learn. So I tried another word for you. I thought I might see if you can understand this. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. Mitä kuuluu?
Hyvä. That's how are you doing? And I answered, yeah, good. So
yeah, I can say yeah as well.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a yes. Well, look, my guest, I've already introduced him, and it's been an absolute pleasure to be able to connect with you because Music Clock, the app you've developed, is one of my favorites. I talk to lots of people about it. I encourage everyone to use it, and it's great fun and has my students, they love it. So it's really great to talk to you about it. But I do want to unpack your bio, which I just read out in the introduction, because there's some crazy stuff going on there with the awards you've won, honestly. So let's just unpack a couple of them, if that's okay. So you won the EU's biggest science competition for youth. Now, what did that involve? Did you create or invent something? What happened?
That was actually, so Music Clock is more like a method, and I build many different kinds of tools. The app is just one part of it, to be honest. But when I was younger, I kind of, you know, wanted to make it into a complete process and method. And the competition, that was for social sciences. That was my category. And it was very, very, it was kind of one of the first bigger competitions I ever got into. And that's when I kind of did a bit of research around this topic that involved music. And that's how I got kind of started with the whole idea. But that was Music Clock, basically.
Right. And then You're a fearless inventor, which I think is a very cool description. And you got the most creative Finn Award at Slush. Now you need to tell us what Slush is and what Slush. Were you awarded that for?
Yeah, so Slush is actually, I think it's the biggest startup event in Europe at the moment. There's like 15,000 people coming all around to Helsinki to basically have this huge hype on startups and new products and on services and all that. And they had this one year, they had this most creative Finn kind of competition where different people were nominated for their ideas, and then the public kind of decided who they think had the most original idea. And that's, I was just very happy to hear somebody nominated me, and even happier to hear that I actually won the thing. So I didn't have too much part in like doing anything, but just they got the recognition. So I'm very, very, I think the title is kind of funny though. You know, to be most creative. I don't really take it seriously. I think it's very kind of, I never use that. I never tell anybody that. So that is a nice recognition anyway.
Absolutely. And you obviously are very creative because you've done a whole lot of different things. And obviously Music Clock and the process and method behind it is one of those things. We'll dive into that in a minute. But tell us a little bit more about your own background, particularly as a musician. Did you learn music as a child? What instrument? How old were you? Or is this something you've done as an adult?
So my parents are not musicians. In fact, there's not a single professional musician in the whole family, but all the children, all the siblings, we all played something. I'm the youngest one. So I have three older siblings, and I grew up basically listening to all of them playing this and that, you know, their scales and their practices. And when I was four, I just wanted to start with the cello as well. My sister played the cello. So I started with the cello, and I it was kind of just fun in the beginning, right? But I stick with it, and I actually learned to like it more and more. And when I was about 12 or 13, I got more interested in you know the composition part of things as well. So I play the cello, but I taught myself how to play the piano too. And that's when actually I started thinking of music theory for the first time, because I had to kind of explain to myself how this thing works, because you know with piano you have to kind of know the theory in a different way than with the cello. So I kind of taught myself. I started composing. I got first lessons in composition. And long story short, I then got into the music university to study composition music theory later on.
Wow.
So it all started with the cello, but then piano got along. At some point, I was taking guitar lessons. I took singing lessons. When I was seven, I thought cello is very boring, so I don't start playing drums. And I've done in a very diverse way, just music all my life, but it kind of comes down to, you know, making music now. I compose, I got my bachelor degree from Sibelius Academy. So, you know, music theory, I kind of fell in love with that more and more when I grew up.
Right. And today, do you do any teaching or performing, or is it more around the theory?
So I teach music theory myself. There's a music school where I'm teaching at. And also, of course, I have like private sessions with students a little bit every now and then. But as for playing, I don't do that much publicly anymore. I play cello for fun for myself. But obviously, I play a lot, but just not performing.
Right.
Composition is still a big part of my life. Just have to be honest that I have so many projects going on right now that I don't have too much time to just like do things for fun and, you know, kind of play around. But, you know, I've composed music for summer theaters, I composed music for short films and this kind of stuff. So, you know, nothing major, but still, you know, it's a passion of mine. So I still have it. But right now I have to say I'm running three businesses. So there's like a lot of different things on my plate, but still music is one thing that I never want to lose.
And you better tell everyone how old you are as well, Perttu.
So I'm 24 and I sometimes feel like, well, because the thing is, when I say these things or when you read my bio, it might feel very, you know, it's obviously very cool and I'm very happy about it, but I never planned any of it, because, you know, one thing has led to another. So it might seem like, well, this is a really overachiever, but I think I was just happy that or very lucky that I found my passion when I was very young, you know, that was music. Then one thing, you know, one invention led to another opportunity that led to another, and you know, now I'm in a situation where I really happy to do many kinds of things.
Yeah.
But it all started with music.
So tell us, you said you run three businesses at the moment, and I assume you teach on the side. That's probably extra to that. What are the three businesses that you're running? Well, actually, give us a breakdown of the main ways in which you spend your time during a week.
Sure. So I could say one major turning point in my life was 2016 when I got into Singularity University, which is a future think tank located at NASA Ames Research Center in Silicon Valley. So I got the scholarship from Google and I went there to study the future and the exponential technology and, you know, how the world is changing. And that truly had a huge impact on me as for what I, how I think, you know, how I see the future, what I think I want to do with my life. And so that time when we were there, we founded a nonprofit that helps teachers in developing countries update their pedagogies. So we use virtual reality platforms and apps to kind of help teachers in remote areas to see how other countries are doing their education system, how they're teaching. It's kind of like a new dimension to like sharing knowledge. You know, the textbooks don't really do the work when you want to demonstrate the dynamics in the classroom or some interactive methods. Or so we want to use virtual reality. So that's in one company, right? Another company is actually just a personal company. I do a lot of keynotes and gigs and I'm writing a book. And, you know, there's many kind of things that I, as a person, I do. So that's mainly for that. And then the third one is the Music Clock startup that was actually the first one that I started when I was in high school already. So obviously, you know, I've ran Music Clock all the time while studying and doing other things. I've never had the opportunity to kind of concentrate on it 100% because I had to finish high school and I had to finish college. And, you know, so it's been kind of on the side. But I guess I'm an entrepreneur at heart at the end of the day because I have all these companies.
Absolutely.
It's always just been a, you know, way to fulfill my dreams and do things that I love. So again, there's not a single entrepreneur in my whole family, you know. So I kind of, nobody showed me the way, but I just kind of found it myself. So I'm very happy for that.
Well, I can only imagine if you're doing all this at age 24, I can't imagine what's going to happen at age 34 or 44. I can't wait to find out more. I feel like I might be meeting a future superstar here. If you're not already, of course.
No, yeah, I mean, I think, I just honestly think we were living in such interesting times when we have all the technologies, all the means and all the possibilities to do great things. Like it's never been better time to really share knowledge and share best practices and, you know, kind of have an impact. So I think I'm just very lucky that I was born in this time and I'm now like living my youth in the 21st century. So what's to complain?
Yeah, that's great. Well, look, take us back to the start of Music Clock. You mentioned that was something you did it while you were studying. What was the catalyst? Why did you create this app? Because I know from experience, creating an app is not a small task.
Yes. No, I think, you know, they always say that, you know, if you knew all the trouble and hustle that goes into starting a project, you wouldn't do it if you knew that in the beginning. But let me just go a little back. I was 15 when I wanted to compose. And at that point, I had developed this kind of passion that I want to be a composer. We went to Mozart's, you know, house in Salzburg, and I kind of, you know, something bit me. And I was like, I want to be a composer. So I had a huge kind of passion to be a composer. But then the theory stuff, you know, hit me. I realized I just have to really know the theory in order to be able to compose these things. And I had struggles with it. I have to be honest. I wasn't like the genius that you might think that, you know, he gets everything. No, I didn't quite understand why the things work, they would work. So people told me, this is how you do it. This is how you form a scale. This is how you make a, you know, triad. But I always like wanted to know more, like how, where does it come from and why? So when I was 15, I was kind of resilient. I went to the music, I went to the library to read about music theory. And I was there studying from one afternoon to another. And one time I remember reading this book where they had explained music in excels. So they made rows and they had 12 kind of boxes. And based on what kind of shape you color to the boxes, you kind of get this scale or chord. And it just, I thought it was a funny idea because they tried to explain music in a different way. But as for me, it just was too difficult. Like it didn't make it any easier, but rather the opposite. So I got this thought, well, could I present music in a new way, but try to make it as simple as possible? Like I've never thought that, but you know, the way we understand music is just the way we've been thought to, you know, think it. So I thought, well, what could I do? So we have 12 notes. What could we possibly, it has to come somehow be connected to the number 12. That's the system of it, right? So now I looked at the clock, you know, it was the afternoon. I realized, well, there's 12 numbers in the clock. Like, has anybody, like right now we organize notes in a line, you know, in a linear line. Why don't we put them into a circle? This guy, you know, in the library had put them into an Excel, but well, what about the circle? So I actually then took my notebook and I draw the kind of first version of the musical where I put the numbers and the note names into a circle. And then my mom actually got there and I had to go back home. But then I continued working on it. And I then the next day I showed my friends, you know, this idea. And of course, in the beginning I had pointer because clock has to have a pointer. So I had pointer showing the notes. And I showed my friends who hadn't, you know, really studied music ever. And I showed them how, you know, you make a chord, how you make a, you know, scale and so. And after 15 minutes, they made kind of realizations that had taken years for me to make. And that was, at the moment, it felt kind of wrong because I felt like I had to study for years to understand, you know, this like Ludian, you know. So I got the first initial validation. Well, my friends kind of, you know, understood it. And that's very cool. Maybe it shouldn't be just a tool for me, but, you know, more like a teaching tool. So the initial motivation for me to just help myself out. I never thought I would start a company. I never thought it would become anything else, but just I was curious to know music theory better. So I developed this tool to help myself out. And I actually used it a lot with my composition when I was 15, 16, 17, 18. And that kind of helped me also get into the college too. So, you know, it was a very personal problem that I developed a very personal tool, but at some point, you know, I realized that other people might benefit from it as well. So I contacted, you know, all these, you know, hubs in Finland. I was like, hey, I have this great idea. But as a 15-year-old, they're like, well, you know, go back to school and we'll talk. It kind of didn't go anywhere until the first kind of invention competition came along. And I saw the papers that there's this competition. So I applied and I won the competition with the idea. And that's the first time they kind of recognized me, you know, there's an idea. So then we applied for a patent. Remember, this is originally a wooden tool. So it's a very practical, physical set of tools. Right. And then only later we made it into an app just because it's easier to get, you know, started with that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I developed it further and further, and we got the patents and we started selling it in Finland. We started using it in Finland. At some point, they're like, well, let's make an app out of it as well. So we did it. We got the initial funding for it. And then, you know, that's how the company started rolling.
Wow.
But that's the story behind it. So very personal kind of task that I just think that, well, if other people are struggling with that too, I could maybe help them, hopefully.
Yeah. So the thing that you patented, I'm assuming is the, I've got the app in front of me here, is the one, the circular reference to the notes of a scale, but also the template that rotates around it, the shape of that template. Is that right?
Yes. And also there are other tools to that as well, which are also including the patent application. I'm not sure actually if you have ever seen this, but this is a tool that you roll across the keyboard.
Like, no, I don't think I've seen this. This is very cool. So this to describe to our listeners, this is the music clock cutout, the shape on the app, but it's as a wheel that he's rolling along his arm. And now he's going to go to the piano and show me. No way.
So it rolls like, you know, this smoothly on the piano keyboard. And in the center of this kind of pizza roller.
It's like a pizza cutter.
Yes, pizza cutter. So you have this little disc in the center that has numbers from 1 to 7. So you can put number 1, let's say, to G, like that.
Yeah.
And for the listeners now, this is a bit more difficult. I can send you a link to the video so they can also see it. But anyway, the piano keyboard and the numbers show exactly which keys to press down to play any given scale or chord or interval and so on.
Huh. So, I didn't realize that was the connection. So that's the pizza cutter type of wheel, the Pertu is rolling along the black notes, and it's rolling perfectly with all the cutouts where the white notes are. And he can change that inner disc to point to whatever note of the scale is the starting note, and it will show the notes to play.
Exactly. It's funny because, you know, piano itself has been played for hundreds of years, you know that, right? But you know, they haven't found anything similar in the padded offices in the US, in China, in Europe, similar to that. And this is such a, you know, simple invention. It feels almost like impossible. Nobody has really thought of it, that you can roll a pizza cutter on the piano keys. So that's part of it as well. Then I can show you, we have the physical versions of the wheels here. So then we have different kinds of games that you can do with this. So I've developed these games with my students. So you can play the music like bingo or lotto. You can, you know, flip this around and try to, you know, see what the scale is here. You know, try to, like, let's say, what is the scale? And you have to find word number one. And there's like a lot of pedagogy behind it as well. The app is kind of like only a fraction of, you know, the things we do. But
That's very cool.
I get into the mind of when I was doing this. I was like, oh my gosh, like, we can do this and that.
Yeah, I can see how that's really, that's an exciting discovery, because I've never seen what you've just shown me before, and I've played piano for all my life, pretty much. That's very cool. So what, for most people that are listening, I'm sure there'll be plenty of listeners who have probably listened to me talk about Music Lock and use it in their studios, as I do, as a scale reference and a backing track. Great fun for backing tracks. But where can they find out all the other things that are related to this?
Right. So right now, it's unfortunately being limited only to Finland. We're setting an Amazon shop so that, you know, people abroad, people in the US, for example, or Europe, so could also buy the physical stuff. Because the first feedback we've gotten from Finnish, you know, teachers is that it really helps the students to, first of all, concentrate, because they have something physical, something tangible, right, to kind of touch. And then also, you know, so many people are visual learners as well, that it really helps them to kind of have it visually in front of their eyes. So we really want to develop it further, but as for now, it's there's been long a lot of kind of testing and trial and finding the right ways to use it. Now I think we're at the point that we can actually kind of give it out to other teachers, other places as well. So the Amazon shop is the first thing to happen for these. But anyway, if there's really, really excited teachers that want to try this out, I can send them, you know, copies of it already.
That's very cool. Well, I don't want to give out your email or anything in case you get inundated with requests, but do let us know when you go live with that, and I'll definitely share that. My Music Staff is the easiest and most efficient way to run your music teaching business. This complete business-in-a-box solution has it all. I've even written a blog post on how I personally used My Music Staff to transition to automatic monthly payments. All my students now receive a monthly automatic invoice, and their credit cards are charged instantly. It couldn't be easier. From a single teacher studio to multi-teacher schools, it has you covered. It will help you effortlessly manage your students, scheduling, billing, and more. It works on any device, so you're always well-informed and in control of your business, even on the go. My Music Staff will allow you to focus more on your clients instead of being consumed by overwhelming and time-consuming administrative tasks. My Music Staff can also be used as a tool to connect your students and parents outside of their weekly lesson. Not only does it allow students to notify you of any upcoming absences and even reschedule missed lessons, it's also a great way to keep your students engaged and learning outside of their time with you. You can leave lesson notes to guide their practice, assign new repertoire, and even upload content like video tutorials, audio, sheet music, and more. This immersive tool is a great addition to any studio looking to improve their business and set themselves apart from the competition. Use My Music Staff to add additional value to your lessons and help you stand out from the crowd. There's no better time to try it for yourself. Just go to mymusicstaff.com and sign up for their free 30-day trial. It's the perfect tool to navigate your studio through the busy back-to-school season. So do you know, data-wise, who is your main user of the app as it stands? Is it musicians or music teachers?
Well, I think the most active users are the music teachers. So what I've noticed is that, as an example, one violin teacher said that, you know, it's kind of dull, you know, if you just have to like practice the scales up but down, but with the backing track, it kind of, you give the context. So it's just a nicer way to practice scales. So in that way, you know, the teachers say that, you know, they use it a lot in their teaching, which is also, I think, very, very nice. So that way it also spreads a little bit to the students as well. They buy it as well. But we don't collect, you know, the personal information or data when you get the app. So we don't really know further from that.
Yeah.
The feedback comments, the community is pretty much music teachers.
Yeah, that's great. And you've got users all around the world, I imagine, for the app?
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
that's pretty much true. It was in the Europe, mostly in Europe, when Apple featured it in the front page, it became number one paid music app in 9 countries. So we got a good start.
That's great.
They noticed as well. It was very nice. But you know, right now, our focus has had to be in the developing of the method in Finland. So we haven't updated the app in a while. So in the long run, I hope that they all could be tied into one another.
Yeah.
So you could have both and they would really help each other out. But as you know, it's kind of easy. It's easier to make a digital product and just, spread it. But when you make something physical, something tangible, it's just a whole lot of legwork to make it
happen. Absolutely. That said too, I know that I've pestered you a few times for a couple of things that I would love to see in the app. And you've gone, oh, look, I'd love to do it, but actually it's kind of just me and a couple of other people. I think it's really easy for us as app users, and not just music teachers, but anyone who uses an app, to assume that the person who has developed it is a millionaire sitting on a beach somewhere and has a team of thousands of people helping them. Tell us, what's the reality behind MusicLock regarding the development team?
Very nice that you asked that, because that's exactly the reality that, I myself don't code, so I cannot just like get my hands dirty and try to, fix things straight away. So in the beginning, as an example, I think this is a good story anyway. It's better as a company to buy things as a purchase. So we didn't hire any coders, any developers into our team yet, because we asked for, the money and resources and stuff. It's better to kind of, get it done. So we did that.
Contracting, right?
Contracting, that's the word.
Yeah.
So we contracted the team to work on it. And so when they finished it, they gave it out and it was very good. But that's when the trouble comes. So when you want to make little fixes with a contract team, it gets complicated, right? Mm-hmm. And slow. If you had a developer in-house, it would be straightforward. Okay, work on it tomorrow, right? So in this way, only when you sell enough and when you can actually put the resources into having your own developer team, you can actually, on demand, fix things. But as everybody knows, there's a lot of shortage on developers and coders. Mm. And especially in Finland, I think it's the same in other countries as well. You really have to find them. And they have such a great opportunity to kind of just pick the work they want. They have incredible, big salaries and all that. So it's difficult to kind of compete against with the talent as a small startup. So that's why the contract kind of way forward is a bit better in the beginning. But then it makes it very difficult to update it on demand.
And particularly when Apple updates things and things break, it becomes very frustrating too, right?
All the different versions and updates and that's...
Yeah. So how many people in the whole MusicLock working with you, full-time, part-time, friends, whatever, how many people are working on the concepts around MusicLock?
Yes. So we started the business with my brother, and he was working with the company for a long time. He's not working on that anymore. He has 2 babies and, other things as well. So right now I'm pretty much on my own, but obviously, as I told, we have, made the contracts with many different partners. So I'm not alone in that sense that I'm like the only one, making things go forward, but the app developer team is kind of in the loop as well. Then we have a good kind of community of teachers. And the people who have really wanted to be part of them, try to test things. Mm. So in that sense, they are not somebody that are even half-time job, or it's not like that, but they're kind of in the loop. So I'm the only one right now really kind of putting my time to it and improving the business side of things. But as for when it comes to pedagogy and developing the product and the service and all that, then I have, people more experienced working with me and Julie. Right. I have the field knowledge to actually, give their perspectives into it. And I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to go teach music theory myself, to kind of not be relied only on the people who tell me this is what it's like, to teach this and that, but actually see it myself. So I think after this was my first year now teaching, I'm so much more equipped to actually build and improve the products and the service. So I think it was very, very good experience to get. So So it's, I think it's, sometimes it feels like when you're working in education, things happen slow and you have to kind of get the teachers buy in, you have to get the parents, you have to, everybody kind of believe in it, and then they can give you the chance. And whereas if you just develop some other app, you can just put it out there and start marketing it heavily, and you know, it's much different. So sometimes I feel like as a young person, I would like to go forward much faster and, you know, do this and that. But then it feels like, well, just patience, you know, sometimes, you know, I think, I know this is not going to be, you know, the 10X business that will change the world. More like a mission for me that I really want to bring something different and new to the music education field, and hopefully something that helps people to find the joy and the inspiration from music. Mm. So it's more like a 2-year sprint, but you know, 5-10 year marathon. So,
and you're going to learn a lot in the process, right? That will lead you perhaps to that 10X business down the track.
Oh, yes, exactly. And yeah. I think it's, you know, I've already learned so much. I think everybody knows that if they start a business, usually it's the second business they know what to do.
Yeah, try the third or fourth or more.
Yeah. So in that sense, you know, because I'm young, I had to have the patience kind of to see that, okay, many things require trial and error. Yeah. But now I know that I'm better off than ever before. So that's very positive.
So for the music teachers listening, if you had your development team of 10 developers in-house and they're all ready to work on your app for you, have you got any ideas of what you would love it to be able to do or where you would see it going in the future?
Yeah, so, oh my gosh. So what I think is something that connects, you know, people from different genres and fields with different instruments is the you know, desire to jam and just have fun with the instrument. I think one of the problems right now with the music school education system, at least in Finland, but probably in other places as well, is that, you know, the whole system has been designed for those who want to become concert pianists, right? And it's 5% of the, you know, whole population, but they all have to go through the same theory lessons, the same kind of, you know, methods and same kind of curriculum. And something that I've noticed is very common among, let's say, pop and jazz musicians, as well as classical musicians, is that, you know, it would be nice to just jam, you know, play something out of your own head, improvise, you know, just make your own music. And in this sense, I when I was young, I didn't remember there was any, at least back then, there wasn't any kind of way to really, you know, meet the need. We didn't have apps and we didn't have, you know, there was a desire, but nothing really helped me. So I would like to, you know, develop the whole idea and method more into, you know, make your own music. And even though music theory might feel like it's an obstacle, it shouldn't be. So if we can help with the theory so that you can actually straightforward go to making your own, you know, songs and improvise, make, play a solo, have fun with friends, that would be really, you know, important to me. I don't think anybody wants to learn the theory just for itself. You know, that's not like the fulfillment itself. It's like grammatics, right? You learn it because you can then speak better. You can, you know, use the language. So the same way you learn theory to be able to, you know, enjoy the music and have more fun with that. So I want to kind of, I obviously I'm a little bit biased because I'm a composer, so obviously I love theory and everything is cool, but I really realize that it's not the same for everybody. So I want to help them, you know, enjoy music without having to spend 3 years in the music theory lessons before.
Right. Well, I don't think anyone could have possibly aligned better with my own thoughts about music. I mean, that's what I love sharing with other teachers, is ways to not teach traditionally and to get kids improvising and composing and learning how music works. And you're absolutely right. It's the theory, it's the practical application of theory that makes it interesting and viable and useful to students. So yeah, the more we can make it practical, the better.
I mean, when you think of how do we learn a language, we listen and then we imitate. And I think music is just the same way. It's a language we should listen to and imitate. But when you throw all these, you know, charts and structures and theories, like, whoa, this is, I mean, yes, it is part of music, but still, is it music? Like, is the musicality behind all of it? Then I don't know. But I was just thinking, you know, maybe in the future, if somebody comes to music school with their just their iPads, like I can play my iPad, you know, but not like any traditional instrument, I think we should still get him or her in, because obviously it's musicality that we're going after. And this kid is clearly musical, even though he or she doesn't have the flute or the violin. But we might have to update our you know, ideas on what is music schools in the beginning. You know, what are they for, and how do they teach, and what kind of teachers? And I don't know. I just feel like there's so much more opportunities nowadays that we have to, you know, update our ideas. What is a band? What is an orchestra? What is a music school? What is all of these things?
Yeah. 100% with you. That's great. Really good to hear. And to hear from someone who's 24 and been through part of the system, I think that's really great to hear too. And I've often questioned if the purpose of a conservatory, do you know what a conservatory is? Is to create concert level artists, then, and there's like 0.01% chance of being a concert pianist in the world, then what on earth are we educating people for?
Yeah.
And is that going to keep them wanting to engage with music for the rest of their life?
Well, exactly. I mean, after I went to NASA and we studied the technology of the future and how the
I'd love to be able to say, sorry to interrupt you. When I was at NASA, how cool is that? Can I? I got to go.
I mean, I was at NASA and like physically, but it was not like NASA's program. Anyway, the point is, you know, when we studied about where the work is going to shift and what kind of work are we going to do in the future, all that, I just realized that, you know, when we talk about the soft skills and 21st century skills, when we talk about courage and creativity and empathy and listening skills and you know, spontaneity and all these different, you know, values that we have, you know, things that make you a good, successful person in the world. I think we can all agree that if somebody's, you know, spontaneous and courageous and good empathy skills, they will be well off. What I realized is that, well, how do we teach these things? It's very difficult to teach what is courage, what is flow, what is creativity. But actually, when you play an instrument or when you do art in general, you get in touch with those things. You know, when you play an instrument, it's much easier to kind of notice what is this creativity thing that I see, what is this courage thing I see, what is this empathy, what is this communication skills. And in this way, I kind of think any better way to, you know, embrace or like prepare a young person to the future than kind of help them get in touch with these kind of skills through art, through music. And sometimes I feel like, you know, people think, oh, we have to, you know, teach them music because, you know, it might improve the, you know, language skills, or it might improve the mathematics skills. But I would say that if we don't teach them art or music, you know, a part of their souls that only will be touched through music will not be touched if we don't teach them, right? So it changed my view on how we talk about music, how we talk about learning art. And oftentimes I feel like if we are now taking music classes out of school, out of the curriculum, if we're actually like reducing the amount dedicated to art, how have we just, you know, failed as artists, as educators, to communicate the benefits of music? Now we have to look kind of in the mirror in that sense. And we all agree that it's great and it's fun. And you know, I've always thought that if you have to explain what bananas taste like for a person who have never seen or tasted banana, how do you do that? It's very difficult. Right? So how do you sell the idea of music lessons of art to a person who has never done those? So it's kind of...
That's a good analogy.
But we have to be able to kind of communicate them why. And if they're taking kind of music lessons out, then we have kind of failed in that. So I think I believe that the right side of the brain will dominate in the future. You know, the art, science, the macro level, the abstract levels, you know, the big picture. So I would say that if you want to get a degree for the future, there's not a single, you know, good degree that guarantees you a good life or like work. But I would say philosophy or, you know, fine arts, those are the only things that will last in time.
Porto, I think you need to become a politician.
I'm just super passionate about this thing. So maybe, Maybe. But
no, it's fantastic. And I love your energy. People will be able to hear your energy coming through and they can't even see you. I totally get what you're saying and it makes so much sense. It's quite interesting from this side of the world, Finland is most often referenced as the ultimate education system in the world. You are doing everything right. Are they also reducing music in schools over there as well as they are over here?
So there's 4 to 5 minutes per week music.
4 to 5 minutes?
Yeah, one lesson. So it's not a lot. It's you kind of really...
Oh, 45 just, minutes, sorry.
Yes.
Per week, okay.
One lesson per week. So it's I mean, when you're seventh grade, then you have some optional music, you can take more of it. But it's, I think, as long as we kind of discuss whether we should have more of this subject and less of that, we're away from the fact that we might have to just redesign the whole way that we can learn. So I don't think that really makes any progress. Or even if we, you know, had 70 minutes, 90 minutes music class per week, it wouldn't really make the difference. So in Finland, it's kind of, last summer, for example, I traveled around the world and I went to schools in California, in Malaysia, in Myanmar, in Singapore. And something that I noticed, whatever school I went to, they all shared the same kind of concern. Oh, our education system is not up to date. We have to change it. It's the exact same thing we're talking about here in Finland. So I think it's very global many people share the same kind of concerns. So we're all in the same situation in that sense. Finland is, I would say that if you're doing now very well with your education system, that's a bad thing because you're not courageous enough to update and change it. That we actually so, if you're kind of coming a bit, behind, that might actually be a blessing to you because you can leap forward.
Go Australia.
No.
Look, I could talk with you about this for some time, but I know we've gone a little bit off topic, although it's been very, very interesting. I do want to ask you one question, and I have your app in front of me here because I want to play you my favorite backing track, which is this one. Yeah. It's just the coolest thing I've ever heard. I think it was if your app didn't have that backing track in it, I probably would never have got it. So it's called Venice Beach Vibes. And I had to ask, did you write all these backing tracks?
Yes. I wrote, I mixed, I recorded, I did everything. So because I have the background composer at the end of the day, I produced the backing tracks and I designed them so that they would hopefully, fit the scale as well.
They do beautifully. So, yeah, I mean, you could be.
I think that's not a scalable solution, though. No, I think in the future we're gonna have a collection or a database of backing tracks. It's not a scalable solution for me to write all of them, but just kind of the first version.
Oh, you'll be creating algorithms to write them for you. I can tell in just a few years. Exactly. I'm sure. Yeah. No, look, I really do love what you've created here. I'm only just learning from today that I'm really only using a tiny amount of what you've created and invented. So I'm going to have to do a bit more research. But look, I can only recommend, I can't recommend any more highly to piano teachers out there. If you're looking for something to make, the way I use it is to make scale playing more interesting. So to give students something to play their scales along to, but also to use as improvisation. So, I'd put this one on and get them to improvise in the key of C or using a C pentatonic scale. The other thing I love doing with that track is getting kids to play the bass line and work out the chord progression because it's a very cool chord progression. There's heaps of potential in this app. Totally love it and highly recommend it.
That's I remember when we were designing the app and there's all the options. Should we do this or should we do that? I think there's like this one progress or process in my mind that I wanted to kind of straighten, which was that normally without the app, if you want to, let's say, improvise, what you first have to do is you have to find a backing track. Or you have to find, something to play along with. And that's not easy, first of all, because you have to know which scales, work with that. So first you need to find the song, and then you have to know which scales to use with it. Well, then you have to know how to play that scale, so which notes are in that scale, depending on what the key of the song is. And if the changes, you know, then you have to know all the different positions. And even that doesn't really help you, because then you have to know, where can I find those keys on my instrument? So there's like many different, you know, steps for you to actually be able to just have fun and improvise. So that's what I really want to kind of help people with the app, you know, that they can just play the song they want, they see the notes, and they can start trying out.
Yep. No, it's great.
I'm happy to give you a comment on that. Back in track.
No, I love it. I really love it. I would actually probably listen to it if it was a whole song. So make it into a whole tune and send it to me, okay? Now, I've got one request which I've had from people who use it, and I might have mentioned this one to you as well, but when you have your development team and you've got lots of time, I would love to be able to change the tempo of your backing tracks. Is that on the cards if things go the right way for you?
Yeah. No, that's actually very valid, and we had to make the decision at the I remember when we were thinking that, like, should we build a MIDI engine to the app so that we had all the MIDI instruments, and then you could really like manipulate pretty much everything about it and mix it, or do we have to make backing tracks that feel as real as possible with the real instruments? For example, we have real, you know, drums at some points, we have some real guitars, and so I remember we made the decision, well, let's make sure that, you know, the backing tracks feel okay to play with, because, you know, that's the most important thing. But you are really, really true saying that we should have the option to change the tempo. There are some algorithms that you can really, you know, fasten the audio without the audio really getting too crappy. But we just have to find, you know, the thing is, Apple has better solutions for the audio editing, and then Android has a bit different. So we are kind of, well, we have to look deeper into that if we can just make it happen easily, or if it's a complicated issue.
Well, there you go. Well, that would be the only thing that I really would love for it. But that said, to people who are listening who have no idea what this app is, it's called MusiClock, MusiClock.com. And it does have lots of different tracks in different styles at different tempo. Or tempi, I should say. So, it's not all stuck in one speed as well. Thank you so much, Perttu, for joining me today. It's been a really great conversation. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's wonderful to finally talk to you face-to-face as well. We've been talking for a couple of years, but, you know, honestly, it's wonderful. If I come to Australia, I will let you know. And if you come to Finland, please.
Absolutely. I would love to host you, show you around. Yeah. No, that'd be fantastic. Thank you again. Heaps of your time today. And I can't wait to follow your progress, because I've got this feeling that there's very big things in store for you in the future. So remember me when you're famous. Okay?
Of course. Yeah. Have a great day.
All right. See you, mate. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed today's fun chat with Perttu from Finland. What a cool dude. And I'm really excited to meet someone so young and so passionate. I just have a feeling that he's going to go on to some formidable, great things in the future. And I can't wait to keep in touch with him. Next week on the podcast, can you believe it? It's the last episode of this season. Episode number 170 is coming your way before we take another break, before we hit season 3 towards the end of the year. And next week on the podcast, it's another business topic. And this time we're unpacking how one teacher is making $100,000 plus a year teaching online only. And my guest has incredible skills in this area and lots to share. He has his own podcast and multiple courses that he sells online. And I think this is a fantastic opportunity to dive into this great topic and potential way that some of you might like to consider making some extra money on the side. Thank you again so much for tuning in today. I do apologize for my slightly croaky voice this season, a little bit under the weather. But hopefully it hasn't impacted your enjoyment of the show so far. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Now, just before you go, if you enjoyed today's show, I'd love for you to check out my Inner Circle Piano Teaching Community. It's the go-to resource for piano teachers looking to continue their professional development, connect with other teachers and experts from around the world, and to access hundreds of world-class training resources, including our academy courses, lesson plans, teaching videos, technology help, and much more.
Whether you're just starting out or have been working hard to build your studio for a while, the Inner Circle community will give you the skills, support, and confidence you need to grow the studio of your dreams, whether that's about teaching a small number of students one-on-one in your home or hiring a commercial space, employing other teachers, and building an entire music teaching empire. With courses on both the teaching and business side of running your studio, live coaching, and our thriving community forums, you can get quick answers to questions, set yourself challenges, get feedback on your ideas, and feel confident teaching in new and exciting ways. For more information on how to join us inside the Inner Circle today, head over to timtopham.com/community, and we'll see you on the inside.
We'll conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.